Martin. I've been up to those Tatsuzawa Falls again, the ones that I did a few relatively nice shots of a few months ago. Well, what would it be? Last May of 2007 I was here last. I'm back here today. I've been up to the falls for about 3 hours, and if you can hear, I'm actually trudging through the snow on the way back to the car. Usually you can drive this road up, but I came back in the back to the area on a spur of a moment yesterday evening, and I was really just trying to get some winter scenics shot. I think one of the biggest holes in my portfolio at the moment is not having some of the beautiful Japanese winters covered, so I decided it was time to get over here. And there's been a lot of snow recently. I'm walking through maybe, I don't know, 80 centimetres to a metre of snow. It's heavy going. I've got all my gear with me. I'm stopping every so often shooting the river and things as well, so I've actually still got my tripod extended with the camera on the top there, just like it tells you shouldn't do in the tripod manuals. But I just wanted to sort of share, I could feel a podcast coming on, so I figured it was a good time to get my mobile phone out and sort of share a few thoughts. One of them, a quick tip here, there's been a lot of snow falling during the day, and I'm a bit out of breath. A lot of snow falling, which means obviously that gets onto the front element of your lens or your protector filter. And if you try and sort of wipe that off with a cloth every time, it becomes a bit of a pain pretty quickly. But if you leave it on, you get all of those little weird effects on the image. So just a quick tip was that they actually roll off pretty easily with the blower, the little dust blower that you use for cleaning off the dust from the front of the lens. That will get rid of little beads of water as well pretty nicely. So quick tip there while I had it in my mind. Apart from that, it's just been a beautiful few hours. The falls were great. I think I've made good use of the new the highlight priority function on the 1DS. I shot a number of images very low at ISO 50 and a few at 100, but I also used the Singray variable ND filter as well for some nice flowing water and hopefully some long exposures for the current assignment as well. But the highlights priority thing, that helped me, I think, to get a higher dynamic range in some of my final images, because there's a problem. The thing is that it also forces you to use ISO 200. 200 or higher. But I think that's okay. I use the Vari ND a few times as well. But even with that on its own, it really helped to get a good dynamic range. I could see that the highlights were not blowing out anywhere near as much in the snow when I had the highlight priority turned on. So that was something that I think I've made good use of. Don't know if I'm making good use of this recording right now, though. I'm still trudging back towards the car. Anyway, I don't know how long I can record on this phone either, so I guess I'll shut up for now, and hopefully we'll be able to follow on from this in a podcast where I'll show you some images that I've just shot. Catch you later. Bye-bye.
Welcome to episode 120 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Thank you. Happy New Year, everybody. That was me all excited about my photographic experience and experiments with the 1DS Mark III on my way back to the car from the Tatsusawa Falls. There were a few things that I found interesting on closer inspection of the results during post-processing, but I'll get to that a little bit later. To start from the beginning, though, on January the 3rd, 2008, I went back to the Inawashiro area of Japan, and on the 4th I went back to the falls. With the snow too deep to drive to the nearby car park, I trudged through the snow for quite a while to get to the falls, and today we're going to take a look at the fruits of my labour. Also, I have a statement from our current sponsors, DXO Labs, in reply to our concerns about their choice of anti-piracy software that they built into their product. I'll read that out at the end of the podcast. But for now, though, I'm happy to continue with the sponsorship. So here's a word from our sponsors. DXO Optics Pro sets the standard for automatic correction of your digital images. Based on extensive analysis of cameras and lenses, this award-winning software enables photographers to improve hundreds of images very quickly, saving time and providing spectacular results. Version 5 of DXO Optics Pro runs on Mac and Windows. Version 5, which has only just been released, incorporates a new generation RAW converter, providing more details and less noise artifacts for a new level of image quality. I actually decided to head out to the area where the falls are literally on the morning of Thursday, January the 3rd, and called to book a hotel in the area shortly before lunchtime. I drove around 4 hours up to the Inawashiro Lake, arriving with around 30 minutes of daylight left to just capture a few shots of the swans that spend their winter at the lake. I stayed at the lake as I was not sure if I would be able to get over to the falls through the snow. And also, the hotel not far from the falls is about twice as, let me say that again. The hotel that is close to the falls, not the one that I stayed in, is twice as expensive as the one that I know near the lake. So that's where I decided to stay, the less expensive one. We're not going to take a look at any shots from this short shoot before night fell, but I do want to look quickly at one from the early morning the following day, before breakfast, which is number 1663. This isn't particularly a great image, but I wanted to discuss my thinking behind the composition, etc. As you can see, I found an area where the sandbank winds its way through the water in an S shape, and also the middle stretch of water makes a similar S shape, both creating sort of a leading line to lead our eyes into the shot. There are lots of swans kind of lazing around as they start to warm up a little after the harsh cold of the night, and a few young swans there sort of swimming into the scene from the right. The back of the scene helps to give our eyes something to stop on, and we can then sort of run along that horizon at the back of the image looking into the distance. Not a great image, as I say, but I quite like the balance and overall sort of communal feel of the swans in their environment. I also wanted to mention that I cropped about 15% of the top and the bottom of this image equally, as I just wanted to, all it was adding really was more white snow and more grey sky, and not really adding anything to the scene, but leaving it would have detracted something. So, I just decided to get rid of that. I shot this with the 70-200mm lens on the 5D, by the way, with an ISO of 400 and a shutter speed of 1/50th of a second at f9. After around 90 minutes of the shore of the lake, I went back to the hotel for breakfast and tried to find out if it would be possible to get up to the falls. I received conflicting information from the two guys at the hotel reception. One said that I would probably get up there because I have a four-wheel drive car, and the other said that I probably couldn't get up to the falls. Well, that was good enough for me, so I decided to drive over and take a look for myself. In fact, I probably would have driven over there anyway. That was one of the main reasons that I'd come over here, and I wasn't really going to take anyone else's word for it, but I'd asked, and I just thought it was interesting that I got conflicting replies. I had planned to shoot the swans in the early morning a little longer, though, but the scene wasn't exciting me at all. I'd been hoping for more morning mist, which just really hadn't materialised, and so I decided to take my chances with the falls straight after breakfast. When I got over there, after about maybe 30-40 minutes driving, I pulled up into a small car park, maybe just big enough to fit five cars in, but there was... It's one that's quite a distance from the closer car park, which I stopped at when I was there early in spring in 2007. That's only around a 5, maybe 7 or 8 minute walk from the falls, if there's no snow on the floor. At the end of this further away car park, though, there was a clear step of snow where the snow ploughs had obviously ploughed up to but had not gone any further. In this deeper snow, I could see, car tracks, one set of car tracks that had gone maybe 20 metres or, 50, 60 feet or so into the snow and then backed up into the, and I could see that they sort of led back into the car park. My car is pretty high off the ground and it's four-wheel drive, but I decided I didn't really want to risk driving up there myself, especially as I had no shovel or anything to dig myself out if I got stuck. So I shifted some gear around, parked up, shifted some gear around between the two camera bags that I had in the trunk because I wasn't going to take the 600mm with me, and I set off to walk up to the falls. I don't know exactly how far it is from the car park. I estimate about a mile, maybe less, but it felt like about 3 miles through the thick snow. I was walking through a small trough made by a number of others, a small number of others, I would imagine, that had also made the journey through the snow. But I assume these were Japanese people, as the width of the trough told me that they'd been made by someone quite a bit smaller than I am. And, the younger generation of Japanese are pretty big these days. A lot of them are taller than me. The middle-aged people... are still, they're a lot smaller than most Western, people. So I found that what was happening was I was getting frustrated because I had to walk through a trough that was no wider than probably both of my feet put next to each other. And the sides of this trough were too high for me to walk through the thick snow. And I shouldn't complain at all because... this is walking through this trough was going to be a lot easier than trudging through the thick, fresh snow. But still, I found it made for very tiring walking. Of course, there was still a fair amount of snow to tread down, and the walk up to the falls is slightly uphill. Also, I'm definitely not as in as good a shape as I need to be. Used to be or need to be to do this sort of stuff. So despite it being below freezing, I found myself sort of having to stop and catch my breath a few times. And when I finally made it to the falls, after about 40 minutes, I was so hot that I'd started to sweat, and I took my down jacket off for a while until I started to feel the chill again before I set about the task of photographing the falls. But back to the narrow trough, what I basically ended up doing was, after a while, I ended up starting to put more energy into sort of kicking my feet outwards to break into the snow so that I could get a wider girth, is it? I wanted to walk with my legs wider apart, so I ended up kicking into the snow to give myself enough room to walk how I would do naturally, but still it was pretty tiring with everything all calculated in there. In image number 1665, you can see one of my first attempts of shooting the falls. Here we can see that I've taken a wider approach to the falls than my shots from spring of 2007. The fawns alone didn't make for a very captivating subject without the fresh green leaves on that branch that we see just off centre here, now bare for the winter. Now the main subject, and indeed my reason for returning at this time, was the snow. As I mentioned in my excited message that we heard in the introduction there, I'm trying to gather more sort of winter shots for my portfolio. I'm actually thinking of putting a winter-only portfolio together and actually bought the rights to use the music that we were played in with after that recording, just for that purpose, to use in my portfolio slideshow of winter shots. But I still really need a few more shots to be able to put together a decent portfolio, so that's what I'm starting to work on here. I was shooting with the 1DS now, having left the 5D in the car for my trek through the snow. For this image, I'd selected an aperture of f11, which gives a fair amount of depth of field at 35mm, and ISO 100 for 6/10 of a second, so just over half a second there. That's plenty long enough to give me that smooth, silky feel in the water, and I was, of course, checking my histogram to ensure that my whites were white, but not blown out. With whites, of course, you really want to pay attention that you have them right over to the right shoulder of the histogram, but not touching it at all. I've composed the shot, obviously, with the large tree along the left of the frame, and those two large patches of snow are kind of anchoring each of the bottom corners, with the stream running out of the bottom naturally. I would have liked a solid body of white all the way up the right side as well, but there are like rocks and trees and stuff over there, so it wasn't to be. One quick tip on metering snow scenes. I've mentioned this before, but I'll just throw this in while we're at it. Generally, when I'm metering snow, I look through the, you know, I take a guess at what I'm looking at, you know, what I'm going to set the exposure at to begin with, and then look through the finder and start to modify it so that if you fill the frame with snow, totally white, and then start to move your settings around, what you'll find is that snow, relatively bright snow, needs to be about 1 2/3 of a stop overexposed, or overexposed as opposed, you know, compared to what your camera thinks it should be. So generally, that's what I do. I just sort of set it up, and then in manual mode usually. And then I'll, just move the aperture to what I want for the, you know, the depth of field, and then set the shutter speed so that it gives me the carrot moving along the exposure scale there. I want to see that go to 1 2/3 above the zero mark, and that's usually perfect for snow. So that's just a quick tip there. In the next shot, image number 1666, we can see that I have included both of the falls. The main falls to the right are actually what they call the male falls, as in masculine falls, and the smaller, more slender falls to the left are the female falls. You often find this naming convention used for double falls here in Japan. I'm not sure if that follows in other countries. These folds are actually pretty much at right angles to each other in reality, but the wide angle, the wide end of the 16 to 35 millimeter lens allows me to get both of them in like this, with very little room either side, but, you know, I can get them in. I adjusted the vertical positioning so that the blob of snow in the bottom left there, that's sort of like an arrow, it's pointing out of the frame in the same direction as the flowing water. This time I'd reduced the ISO to 50 and was shooting still at f11, but for 1/8 of a second now. You might notice from the EXIF data, if you're looking at these on my website at martinbaileyphotography.com, that for this shot and a few of the others, I'd actually switched to aperture priority mode, even though I just mentioned shooting in manual mode. And I wanted to just touch on the reason for this. I'd started to take some 5-shot bracketed images so that I could maybe try some HDR mergers when I got home. And I, you know, as I found, the reason I wanted to do HDR was because I found that there was a lot of, you know, a lot of contrast. The the bright whites were obviously I was needing to expose to those, but that was really allowing the water to go very, very dark. And so what I'd noticed, though, was after I'd been working like this for some time, the camera in the bracketing mode, well, auto-exposure bracketing, AEB, was it was changing the aperture and not the shutter speed when it was working through the set of five exposures. And that, of course, is not what I wanted. If the aperture changes, then the depth of field changes, and that would it would make me not be able to use the resulting images in an HDR merge. I could not think for the life of me why this was happening, but I found that if I changed from manual mode, which I used most of the time and I'd been using up to that point, to aperture priority mode, the brackets worked how I expected, with the shutter speed changing instead of the aperture. When I got home and looked into this, it turns out that one of the custom functions that I'd changed was behind this. And although not obvious, I found it relatively easily because I knew the sort of the changes I'd made. When I was playing around with the 1DS, I found that what I'd done, in manual mode, basically I'd switched the main dial, which is the one near the shutter button, with the quick control dial on the back of the camera. So instead of the main dial changing aperture, I think it is, it was changing the shutter speed and vice versa. So what I'd done is I'd switched those around. For those of you that are interested, that's custom function in set 4 and custom function number 5. It's called TV/AV setting for manual exposure. It does state in the manual that when you make this selection, the shutter speed will be fixed and the aperture changes when you use auto-exposure bracketing. So it was right there. But I'd not paid any attention to that when I'd been playing with the custom functions. Anyway, with that explained, I should also say that HDR didn't help much with the dynamic range, so I didn't use that in my final selection. I had also mentioned in my excited recording that I tried using the highlight priority setting to overcome the dynamic range issues. Well, it turns out that I was slightly wrong about that too. We'll see in a moment, but let's bring up image number 1668. I've done a few things during capture here that I want to go into, but to start with, I have used, as I say, the highlight priority setting on the 1DS Mark III. What this does, as the name states or suggests, is give priority to the highlights, which is, in this case, the snow. I saw immediately that the snow stopped blowing out at the same exposure with the highlight priority turned on. What I suspected but couldn't really tell from the LCD, though, was that this actually caused a lot more grain in the shadows, which is, of course, the water and the rocks in this shot. The thing is, highlight priority doesn't really increase the dynamic range, it just shifts it. What it gives you is highlights, you've got a lot more gradation possible, a lot more data saved in the highlights, but it robs you of this from the shadows. So you end up with less bits to store your data with in the shadows. So it results in, I wouldn't say so much grain, but like less of the gradation, the gradual steps that you have going through from black to the dark to mid grays are much fewer. So you end up with much more sharp jumps between the various gradations. I still like this shot as it is, with a lot of contrast between the blacks and the whites, but I'm going to be more careful when using this feature in future. It will probably work much better when the majority of the shot is lighter shades rather than a high contrast shot like this. Also note that the blueness of this shot is partially, I believe, caused by the Singray Vari ND filter, which is something else that I want to go into now. I'll put a link to the details of the Very ND filter from Singray into the show notes, if you're interested in taking a look, that is. But basically, this is a filter that looks a little like a polarizer, but it's basically a neutral density filter. But as you turn it, it gives you, as the name suggests, variable degrees of neutral density from 2 stops to 8. And I'll probably do a full podcast on this filter once I've got more example images. But here what I've done is I put the filter onto my 70-200mm lens with a stop-down ring, I should mention. I bought an 82mm Vary ND so that I could use it with the 16-35mm f2.8 version 2 lens. But the 70-200mm f2.8 has, as many of you will probably know, a 77mm filter mount. So I need to stop down that difference with an adapter. When the, what happened after that though, I basically sort of lined up the shot, got it all ready. And the cool thing is that having set everything up and deciding that I wanted about an 8 second exposure, my first shot showed me that my highlights were blowing out slightly. And so I think it was blowing out. I don't remember exactly. The exposure wasn't correct anyway. So instead of changing the exposure with the camera, so that I could maintain my depth of field and my the shutter speed, which I wanted obviously for that silky flowing water look, I simply turned the Vary ND, and that just gave me more darkness, as it were, and then just reshot the image. And I just thought that was really cool to be able to do that. I can't wait to work more with this filter so that I can talk to you more about it. One downside of this filter is that even though I bought the thin-framed version to reduce vignetting on wide-angle lenses, it has a significant amount of vignetting at the wide angle, the wide end of my 16-35mm lens. Even when I remove the protector filter and use only the Vary ND, which was pretty disappointing. Apart from that, though, I'm very happy with it. And, I shot this shot at f11, by the way. And as I said earlier, the highlight priority setting forces a minimum ISO of 200, so that's what I was shooting at. I spent the, I think probably around 3 hours, 2.5 to 3 hours at the falls, with a significant amount of that time wasted because of the aperture changing instead of the shutter speed for my bracketed shots. But I still chose the middle one that was exposed how I expected for a few of those, like one of the ones that we looked at earlier. Still though, I had a great time just sort of being out there in the cold with my camera and the falls and the snow. I didn't really realize that I was going slightly uphill to the falls until I started to make my way back. As I was going along back towards the car from the falls, I noticed that the walking was a lot easier, even with the narrow trough. And I think it was probably because it was slightly downhill, and it was just enough to put the pressure on me in my the out of shape Martin on the way up, and probably also the having done all of the shooting and everything, the excitement and a little bit of adrenaline helped me to get back to the car without getting anywhere near as tired as I had done on the way up there. I stopped a number of times on the way back to shoot the scenes around me. I've posted a number of those. I'll put a link into the show notes so that you can see all of the shots from the from the few minutes at the end of the previous day and this day. I want to look at one last shot quickly before we finish that I shot from the looking back along the road, up the stream, that I'd walked along to get to the falls. And this is image number 1670. With the patches of snow on the rocks in the river, with the snowy banks, I really just couldn't help but shoot a few more shots like this one, which gives you a good idea of what the run-up to the falls looks like. I shot this at f16 for 1/20th of a second, again at ISO 200. I think I was still in highlight priority mode here. I made my way past what would have been where I'd parked the car had it not been under a few feet of snow. And I made my way back down the track to where I had actually parked this time. But I decided on the way, in my excitement, that I was going to record that message that we were played in with. I just basically love the sound of trudging through snow, and that was what made me think about recording it. But then, you know, I could really feel that podcast coming on, and I just decided to have a quick chat, which I'm glad I did. It also, you know, it really whet my appetite for the Hokkaido workshop, which is now just under 3 weeks away, which I'm really excited about and looking forward to. So that's almost it for today. I hope you enjoyed joining me at the Tatasawa Falls. Before we finish, just a quick update on the DxO Labs use of Interlock in their software that I reviewed a few weeks ago. And I, you know, will be giving away a version of the DxO Optics Pro version 5 and the film pack as the grand prize for our assignment winners. As I mentioned in the intro earlier, though, DxO Labs have gotten back to me on the concerns raised about their use of the product called Interlock to prevent piracy of their software and to enforce the time limit on the demo version of their software. And here's what DxO have to say. Thanks to Martin for providing DxO Labs with an opportunity to briefly comment on the Interlock issue. We've used Interlock to manage and protect the license of DxO products for some time now. One thing we would not be able to do without Interlock or a similar solution is to provide a time-limited, fully functional demo version. Certainly the use of Interlock is not something new, nor is it something hidden with version 5 of the product. Rather than devising our own licensing software, which is clearly not DxO Labs' core competency, we have always worked with solutions coming from companies specialized in this field. Based on the feedback we have received from Martin, his audience and others, we are reviewing how we could make use of Interlock more obvious to the user prior to installation. After more than 3.5 years of selling DxO products to the vast worldwide audience, we are yet to have a confirmation of a single case where a user lost any data due to Interlock/DxO software. Were we to have such a confirmation, we would extend the guarantees as documented in the user license agreement. In terms of the future, we're always reviewing possible scenarios/changes to our licensing technologies. A change, if selected, would have to make sense and bring increased benefits. In that respect, the opinion of our user base / potential user base and opinion leaders is something that we always listen to very carefully. So that's the statement from DxO Labs. Thank you very much, guys, for taking the time to send us that. I've got to say that I'm not 1,000,000% happy about the situation, but I definitely understand DxO's reasoning, and I applaud their openness and willing to work with me on these concerns. So let's just proceed with the sponsorship and get that prize out to the person with the most accumulated votes at the end of the long exposures assignment currently in progress. And with that, all that remains to be said is thanks for listening, and you have a great week, whatever you do. Bye-bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.